It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Jim Dalrymple joins the gang. Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie. We're going to talk about the iPad Pro. Orders start tomorrow or when? Or, well, we'll find out. Also coming up, Andy discusses how he lost his MacBook and found a new friend. And we'll take a look at new features in the Apple TV. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 480, recorded Tuesday, November 10th, 2015. Leo's Gadget Hutch. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Braintree. Looking to set up payments for your business? Braintree gives your app or website a payment solution that accepts just about every payment method with one easy integration. Plus, Braintree will give you the first $50,000 in transactions fee-free. To learn more, visit BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. And by Corning Optical Cables. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com to learn more. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the place to create a beautiful website or online store. Enter the offer code MACBREAK to get 10% off. Squarespace. Build it beautiful. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. I'm liking it. It sounds like my law firm, Dalrymple, Ritchie, and Iannocco. I like it. Hello, Jim Dalrymple.
How are you?
It's getting a little cold out there.
It is getting a little bit cold, but not as cold as it is in where Renee is.
I know. Poor Renee's in Montreal, Renee Ritchie. Jim Dalrymple from The Loop, loopinsight.com. Renee Ritchie from imore.com.
Morning, Leo. It is getting brisk out. I will give you that. I have to shut the windows and board up the doors.
Hey. Really board up the doors. No, wow.
I don't want to be stuck in here. When the snow melts, Leo, and the pass is open again, I'll get back to town.
And also from Boston, where it's probably getting a little chilly too, Andy Iannocco of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Yeah, it was warmer than L.A. when I left, and then it was colder than L.A. when I came back. So. Also, damn kids ripped all the trees off my oak tree and just didn't even steal them. They just dropped them right on the floor.
Sigh.
Who's going to have to pick those up? I'll tell you who. My neighbor, when I blow him into their yard, and he's not going to be happy about that.
Alex Lindsay would be happy. He was telling people, don't go to the first few weekends of the Steve Jobs movie. Apparently, people took his word and didn't. And it opened very, very weakly. Wow, did you see that? I got a big ad blocker announcement from Cult of Mac. I'll have to let's see if I can get it again. It says, we don't like ad blockers.
The Economist, Leo.
The Economist, in fact, I had a guy from The Economist on Triangulation yesterday. I should have asked him about that. But that's not his problem.
No.
He's a senior editor there, but that's not his problem. Steve Jobs booted off screens. It's almost like the 1985 Apple board is running theaters, says Cult of Mac. Terrible, terrible opening weekend. The James Bond movie, Spectre, took in $73 million in its opening weekend. The Jobs movie, $823,000.
Oh, okay, let's just review. This is a talky movie about a business executive going up against a James Bond movie and a Peanuts 3D animated movie. It wasn't fair, was it? It's not as though this thing was guaranteed to make its money back in a dull weekend. But okay, this was maybe this is more like an Oscar qualifying run before a video release as opposed to a money making.
How is it compared to Social Network though? Because that's probably a fairer comparison.
Yeah,
another talky tech leader.
I don't know. This was talkier than the Social Network. Even this was like a theatrical play.
It just feels like the wrong movie. They made the wrong movie. They made a movie that wouldn't appeal to anybody instead of one that might even just appeal to some.
If Steve Jobs had maybe shot some people, had maybe a
if he was Batman.
I think he did in an early draft of the script. It was didn't really happen, but it was based on something that was a amalgamation of the time.
Mm-hmm.
If they'd shown him introducing the iPhone and using Snapchat, all the kids would have gone.
The movie has earned $16.6 million so far, which is not bad, but it's barely more, according to Cult of Mac, than the Ashton Kutcher movie Jobs. I think we could probably all just celebrate the failure of this movie. It has moved out of the theaters now. They took it out of more than 2,000 theaters, so it's down to a few hundred now.
And, so when Aaron Sorkin writes the inevitable Eric Schmidt movie, he needs to learn a lesson from this one.
Yeah. And just
better target it to his audience.
Yeah, the Eric Schmidt movie.
So only show it on Google Campus.
The Eric Schmidt movie. Will he ever write an Eric Schmidt movie? I think it's fairly safe to say no.
Larry and Sergey get off scot-free.
So he did. He's done Zuckerberg. He's done Steve Jobs. Who? I mean, I wonder.
Gates.
Yeah. I would go see a Gates movie, and I'd be honest with you, if there are lies in it, I wouldn't mind. Right? Let's be honest.
Wow. How about a version? This Jobs movie didn't focus on his entire life, just some key sequences from the life. So what if Sorkin does a Bill Gates movie based solely on his arrest for speeding, and basically we make it into a rerun of a remake of Cannonball Run 2?
They could show all the CES keynotes.
We'll give him the mustache.
Imagine the bloopers.
They could show the CES keynotes, but no one would ever recognize the technology he talked about.
John C. Dvorak used to take Bill Gates' keynote speeches and edit everything but the gulps out. And then he had a 3-minute video of Bill Gates.
He could deny Steve Ballmer 3 times.
There's a movie I wouldn't go see.
Must you betray me with a Zoom?
But honestly, I think I say that in jest, but I think it really underscores the problem here is that people don't want to see. People did idolize Steve Jobs. Remember when he died? That was a genuine outpouring of emotion. And I don't think the same feeling about, let's say, Bill Gates. Nothing against Bill Gates. But I don't think people would be as upset about a Bill Gates movie that fudged the facts. So, Aaron, have at it.
Well, partly because there's so much less of a mythology around Bill
Maybe,
Gates.
Maybe, yeah.
And I we talked about this a little bit last week, where I do think that people create fictional characters based on real people, and they create the version of Steve Jobs or Paul McCartney or anybody that they feel as though they need in their life. So it was going to be a hard task no matter how they did it, I think.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Did you see it,
Jim? Have Joshua Molina play Bill Gates. It'd be fantastic.
Oh, perfect.
I have not.
Yeah, so none of you have seen it. I'm the only one who's seen it. No. And I can't scrape it off my eyeballs. It wasn't probably a bad movie, but it just was so hard to swallow the feeling that you felt it was doing a disservice to Steve.
Let me ask you a question. What if it was the most thinly veiled fiction ever, like the exact same script, exact same everything, right? Only instead of Steve Jobs, make up a different name. Instead of the products, just make up different names for these exact same products.
Then it would have been great.
You have then thought it would have, if it were inspired by the life of Steve Jobs, would you have enjoyed it?
Well, I think that's what they should have done. In fact, I mentioned that. I said it could have been called like Steve Blobs or something. It would have been a much better movie, because then you could go, oh, well, I understand they're not trying to do anything biographical. But as much as Aaron Sorkin would say, this is not a biopic, not a biopic, it's a biopic. I'm sorry.
I agree.
Kind of like how the make... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Tomorrow. All right, we're moving on. Who cares? It's a movie. It's over. It's done with. Tomorrow. I went today. I'm disappointed. I was going to buy 3 iPad Pros, 3 pencils, 3 even of those dumb keyboards. But I couldn't.
No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
You can order tomorrow. You can't buy tomorrow.
It's official. Apple put out a press release. It's not a rumor anymore. But in the press release, I don't think they said 12:01 Pacific. Did they say anything?
No.
It's like Apple TV. It'll kind of happen during the day when it happens.
God dang it. Will it be, though? It won't be one of those things where if you didn't get it in the first 10 minutes, you'll have to wait 3 months, right?
Maybe, because I don't know anybody who would want the 32-gig version. And if you want 128 gigs,
right,
and you want to have it this week, I would make a pot of coffee and stay up just in case it goes on sale at 12:01 Eastern.
Or it's 3 a.m. Eastern, Andy.
What if they were to say that people in Boston actually matter? Okay.
We got rid of B-Mug.
Watching Colbert.
We got to wrap rid of Macworld Boston. We're sure as hell not going to change
us. 3 a.m. That's hard. like the Apple TV, I was up at 3 a.m. Well, I was in the West Coast, but I was still up at midnight, you know, 12:30. I had alarms set for every 30 minutes, and it ended up being like 5:30 in the morning that it finally went on sale.
And I was sitting in a room with the Apple people, and we were saying, no, not yet. Let Rennie get up another hour.
Jim was just
it was you, huh? It was you.
When the Heineken ran out, he finally pressed the button.
Renee just tweeted, I hate to step away from the computer, but I really have to go to the bathroom. Okay, no.
Yeah.
He's taking way too much joy in this. That was awesome. Yeah. Way too much pleasure in this.
I must say,
you may have that joke.
Well, do you know anything, Jim? Have you heard from sources?
No, I mean it's kind of a strange thing because when they launch these pre-orders, typically they sell out. So then you end up waiting. That even happened with iPhone, if you remember back a few years ago when they decided to do iPhone pre-orders instead of having people line up at the stores. Then you had to wait for quite a while. Watch was the same thing.
Right.
But iPad hasn't been selling as well as all of their other products. And there hasn't been the demand for iPad that there has been for their other products. So that's going to be the interesting part about the whole pre-order thing. Is the iPad Pro enough of a draw that it's going to, you know, sell out on the pre-orders? Or are you going to have the pre-orders? Those are delivered and people can still go to the stores and buy it. There's a lot of things that we don't know, like what the supply is of these things and everything else. But, you know, having used it, I think it's going to do pretty well.
Yeah, I think the people who want it are going to be really super motivated to get it early. But the question is whether there's going to be enough people who want to get an $800 13-inch tablet that it would create a run on demand. I mean, I didn't stay up late to buy the Apple TV and pre-ordered as soon as it went live. But I, you know, a couple of days later, I thought, maybe it'd be nice to have one. Place the order at like 8:30 in the morning, and by the time I got to the store, it was ready to be picked up.
There were so many people so angry who pre-ordered the Apple TV and they got it later than it was available in stores. So it'll be interesting to see if people now, no, I'm not going to pre-order. I'm going to go to the store on Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, that's weird how they're not being really specific about it. I really do for professional reasons as well as personal reasons. I do want to have it like as quickly as I can have it.
Right.
But I don't know whether that means pre-order, order it online and then have it shipped, or whether that just simply means, again, wait until 12:01 a.m. on the day it's supposed to drop in stores and then just simply pick it up in person.
I'm going to make a prediction that it will be quickly out of stock. Only because I think Apple would love to prove that, yeah, there's been dwindling interest in the iPad. That's only because everybody has one, but there's going to be huge interest in a new form factor, 12.9-inch iPad. So one way or the other, whether it's inadequate stock or excessive demand, one way or the other, I think it's going to be hard to get after the first few day or two. It's going to be there.
I guess it's also just even because it's hard. Like it's hard to make. Like it's got so much technology inside it that it's probably, and it's the first run. And there's almost always constraints on the first run of something that uses new screen technology, new input technology, and all those things.
Yeah. On top of that, I bet they don't know what the demand is going to be. I really don't know if they have any real guesses. I tend to think it's an urban myth that Apple intentionally constrains shipments of the first iPhones, but maybe I don't think they're constraining, but maybe they're saying if we have a little too few, better to say that we've sold out and people have to wait a week than have so many sitting by the docks we try not to explain why they're all at Best Buy and now you can buy
cages full of playbooks.
Yeah.
you absolutely don't want to have a bunch in the store window, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to be cynical or anything, but Apple's not immune to marketing. And perception would be very good for this to sell out quickly would be very good. And maybe it is hard to make. Why would it be hard to make?
Well, it's not that it's hard. A lot of the stuff that Apple makes is not they don't just buy components off the shelves. They design the stuff that makes the stuff that they put in these products. Right. And we've seen that with Retina displays, and we've seen that with, you know, with Touch ID sensors, and we've seen that with A8 processors, that getting the stuff in sufficient quantity and yield. We saw it with the Apple Watch, where they had to throw out tons of them because they just couldn't produce them in sufficient quantities with sufficient reliability with the Taptic engines at first. So making something that the screen here is much bigger than before, it's got twice the amount of resolution for the touch input as before. It's got to work with the Pencil. It's got an A9X processor in it, which is brand new. So there's just the opportunity for Apple to make tons and tons of these and have a super high yield rate is not great.
Tim Cook, in an interview with the Telegraph in England, said, I think if you're looking at a PC, why would you buy a PC anymore? This is from Tom Warren, who covers, by the way, Windows for The Verge. He says, no, really. Tim Cook says, why would you buy one? Is the iPad Pro a replacement for a notebook? I guess we don't know until we get one. Seems to me it is not, just because of the software. You need to have...
I don't think there's anything out there that's a replacement for the PC right now, because I don't think that we're ready to take that step. And it's funny, the people that are taking that step are elderly people and younger people, like kids.
Right.
They're the ones that are taking that step because they're the ones that don't want to have to deal with all the problems that we associate with PCs. And when you look at what the iPad offers, it's a very simple interface. It's touch, which is why kids can outperform any adult.
Yes.
You know, they just sit down and start touching, and they automatically know what's going to happen. And that's why those two groups of people are really excelling at using these products. And the rest of us are kind of stuck in this group, and it is the majority, are kind of stuck in this group of, we still need our PCs, we still need our Macs, and, you know, we'll use these as an add-on, you know, a complementary type of device that we can still use on a daily basis. So until that changes, and I don't think that's coming anytime soon, you know, it's iPads, tablets, all of that stuff are kind of, they're going to be a second class citizen.
Renee?
Yeah, it's one of those statements that it's bombastic. It's like, oh no, he didn't say that.
It's
what gets a lot of attention. The thing is, though, that when they're referring to PC, my belief is that he's talking about Windows. He's not really talking about Macs, because Apple does Mac versus PC and things like that all
the
time.
I think you're right.
And he said that he only traveled with an iPad Pro and an iPhone right now. But beyond that, there is still an incredible amount of people. I mean, you walk into a Best Buy and you walk out with a PC, and you don't know how. Like, if you're brand new to computing, whether you're young or old, they don't teach you how to use it. It's like giving someone a car without any driving lessons, and it sits there, and you try to do stuff, and you call your neighbor's kid for help. And it's a very frustrating, inaccessible experience, even for really smart people who just aren't attuned to technology. And exactly to Jim's point, from the beginning, the iPad was supposed to be, you know, it was Steve Jobs said it was one of the most important things he ever worked on. And that's for a man who spent his entire career trying to democratize and mainstream technology, that they want to make something that's super accessible, that's approachable, that's not intimidating, that maybe doesn't do as much as a giant honking PC, but lets you do more with it than you'd be able to do with one of those. And I think this, because of the Pencil, because of the keyboard, because of the size, they feel like it's their best shot yet at replacing a laptop or a netbook or a notebook or one of those kinds of computers for a large amount of mainstream people.
Yeah, I think.
And see, I can see Tim's point with traveling, because these days I often will just travel with an iPad and a phone. But, you know, Apple has made the 12-inch MacBook so good and so thin and so light that it's nothing just to throw that in the bag just in case I need it. And that's getting back to the whole problem that I was talking about before. I will take that computer if I'm going away for, you know, 3 or 4 days. Well, you know, you never know. I might need to actually sit down and you know, dig into some work, and I'll just throw it in the bag. You know, chances are when I do go, I don't use it, because, you know, Dave Mark and Sean King, you know, Dave's doing a terrific job on the site when I'm not around. So, you know, he looks after all the stuff that needs to be looked after. But it's still the mindset. If I'm going to need to do that real work, I better throw it in there, even though I can do a lot of it on the iPad.
Andy?
Yeah, I mean, there's it's kind of like getting astronauts 95% of the way back to Earth. You don't get credit for that. And in so many ways, I think that right now an iPad is about 90% what a notebook is. But those times where I've got a file, I need to get it on the device. It's too much of a pain in the butt still. And given that Apple is also really explicitly saying, here is the sort of keyboard that we envision iPad users using. And it's, I think I have... I want to reach over and get it, but it's a fabric-covered mechanical key switches, but really flat fabric-covered bumps that are okay if you're trying to avoid typing on things. But if you so much of work when you're sitting down for more than a couple hours, it really is. I got to type, and I need a way to. I need a trackpad. I need a mouse, and it's just not useful for that sort of stuff. I mean, I think we all on this panel go through that every single time we pack for a trip. I once took an iPad with me for one entire week in Ireland, and it was just fine. Last week, however, I was in LA for 6 days. There were a couple of things I needed to do, and it was just those two things, maybe less than 90 minutes worth of actual stuff, that made me bring my 13-inch MacBook. And like Jim said, the decision to take my iPad for a week in Ireland was made back when my MacBook was 15 inches instead of 13. And even the MacBook Pro, it's a lot heavier than an iPad, but it's not so much bigger and heavier that I wouldn't think of taking it. So I think that when I read that quote, it's obvious the sort of fire that you throw when you're being interviewed ahead of a major launch that you're hoping big things for. But I did see it as specifically a broadside against Microsoft Surface. I think they're saying that they're aware that Surface is a tablet that's about the size of an iPad Pro, costs about as much as an iPad Pro, and they're saying, well, why would you want it to be a PC? Wouldn't you want every advantage you can possibly get of having a multi-touch tablet? And for them, that's an iPad.
Here's the quote. iPad Pro is, quote, a replacement for a notebook or a desktop. For lots of people, they will start using it and conclude they no longer need to use anything else other than their phones. I think, though, there may be an issue with the iPad Pro in that context. Don't you really want software that's designed for the iPad Pro? Or is that not the case?
Happen.
Yeah, but I mean, for right now, I mean, am I going to be able to tomorrow buy an iPad Pro and then leave my computer at home?
There's a bunch of good stuff, like the Office apps are being updated. Adobe's already got some great updates. Procreate's been updated. Paper, I forget the name of the app.
I saw Paper's been updated give you a bigger canvas. What happens if you use the old Paper on the 12.9-inch iPad Pro? Does it just look small?
Yeah, it just scales up. But
so it's kind of like the iPhone iPad thing, where if it wasn't designed for the iPad, it looks like an iPhone app?
The better analogy is when they went to iPhone 6.
Okay. Yeah. And you had a bigger screen, you just blew stuff up.
Yeah.
So it will fill the 12.9 inches, but it will look funky because it's got
It's still 4x3.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jim.
Yeah, it's not going to look crazy, like stupid, when the app blows up. But clearly, like Rene said, you know, it's going to be a lot better once the apps are made for the iPad Pro. And I think one of the things, it's not once the apps are made, it's going to be... when we figure out what apps we want to be made, you know, that's going to be the big thing. Is this iPad Pro going to be a big graphics thing? I think clearly it will be. But what are the other uses? You know, Microsoft is in on this. So they're making apps. So productivity is obviously going to be a great thing, too. It's just the level of where we're going to go with this new product. I think that is going to determine a lot for us.
Tom Warren says there's the unavoidable truth that tablets aren't replacing PCs yet. Apple's latest financial results says Mac sales up 3%, iPad sales down nearly 20%. Tim Cook can drum up interest in the iPad Pro all day long, but Apple's giant tablet. I noticed the Surface is not a giant tablet, but Apple's is a giant tablet.
What's your alternative not to try? I mean, it's the same thing with Microsoft, the Surface. I like that they're trying this. I saw they were talking about the Coda app yesterday from Panic, and that app has been updated. One of the big differences now is their size classes. So even though it's not exactly made for iPad Pro, it'll still adapt to it. And Coda made it for iPad Pro. So you have not only the split view and all the multitasking, but you can put Safari on one side and Coda on the other, and it'll push live updates to Safari while while you're coding in the other side. And that kind of stuff is terrific. And we're going to just see more and more of those kind of clever implementations.
He brings up the angle issue. He says they're not paying attention to what Microsoft has learned from Surface, because Surface was a failure at first, especially Surface RT. For one thing, the angle, they only had one angle in the original Surface Pro for the screen. And he says Apple's got the same problem. You put that keyboard on, it's one angle.
That's third-party keyboards. They'll have any angle they want.
That's the big difference. Yeah. The kickstand on the Surface was built into the Surface.
Yeah.
So you can have any angle you want. Do you think we'll need a key? Should I buy the keyboard? I really don't like that fabric keyboard.
I don't think so.
No.
I've had some time with the iPad Pro. I've not had any time with this keyboard, but like I said, I've had experience with keyboards that are almost exactly like that based on the technology. And I've tried to do an entire day's work on them, but I have failed to do so because it's just not comfortable. I mean, you really do want comfort, not convenience. And I'm sure that Logitech and other companies are going to fill the void and give you something akin to a real keyboard.
Logitech has already announced something called the Create for iPad Pro that uses that connector on the bottom.
That's a great thing that we have all of these third-party companies that are coming out with apps and coming out with accessories and things like that. And Apple opens up the market for that.
Right.
So it's a great thing.
So defer
if
you can. I mean, how much is the Apple keyboard? $100, $129?
And if you look at someone like Federico Vittici from Mac Stories, who just lives on the iPad, he does everything on the iPad, and he is a high-functioning nerd. Like, he's doing Python, and he's doing scripts and all sorts of automation, and I don't think he's ever going to go back. So there's clearly, it depends on your work style as much as anything else.
You definitely want the pencil, though, right? Even if, I'm no artist.
So great.
I can't, would I become an artist? Will I be a better drawer?
It's like the Matrix. It plugs into you and makes you an artist.
One of the things that really attracts me to the iPad Pro is that idea that, I don't travel with drawing tools because same reason why I didn't used to travel with big, heavy books, because the enjoyment I get out of them is disproportionate to the pain in the butt of actually hauling them around. But when you now have a tablet, a device that is a great drawing device, yes, you will take it out and draw. I was at the LA County Art Museum, and there are a couple of galleries where the art is owned by private people and they don't allow photography. And this beautiful gallery of Picasso's, like his entire career in there. And I wanted to remember what that was like. So that's part of my time stream when I go back later on. And also I wanted to remember what it was I liked about it. And so I had my iPad mini with me and I just took it out. I took out paper and I drew I drew my own version of this one particular Picasso. And I think that's going to encourage a lot more people to do stuff like that. If it costs $99 to have this beautiful art kit, in addition to whatever app they're running on the iPad Pro, it might make them not even professional artists. I don't think Apple has ever really been keen. I don't think that's ever been Apple's point to say, if you're a professional artist, you'll find this a great professional tool. I think Apple's point has always been, we will make you want to take more pictures by giving you a camera that really works great and it's easy to get great results from. I think this is like the iPhone camera, only with art.
All right. You talked me into it. There's a company called IVSO. It is selling a keyboard. They're number keyboards, actually. I'm kind of impressed with this. This is the 1990. I don't know if this is any good. I don't know if the angle's adjustable. Do I want to have an adjustable angle? This is Bluetooth, by the way. It does not, like the Logitech, use that connector.
You want – sometimes my experience with my own iPad, sometimes you do want a little bit of adjustability, if only to avoid glare when you're sitting in a specific place that you can't move from. It gives you some flexibility there.
Yeah.
For me, again, based on my experience, I think that my favorite answer will be just to have an external keyboard, a really good portable Bluetooth keyboard, full size, full stroke keys. Because if I really want this to be the equivalent of a notebook, it is sad but true. But I can spend $40 on a Bluetooth keyboard and I'll have better keys than I have on my MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
I find more comfortable.
Or an Apple
keyboard.
Right? Yeah. I have an extra magic keyboard.
The origami.
Because we ordered an iMac for Lisa's office, and she has her own wired mouse and keyboard. I said, oh, good. Put the magic keyboard and the new mouse in there. And so, because you get that with the thing. So I'll have a magic keyboard. Maybe I'll just use a magic keyboard for it.
I hope they make a version like the Typo keyboard. As much as we made fun of their BlackBerry style iPhone thing, the Typo keyboard for the iPad was great and it had a very, very good hinge on it when you adjust it. So I'm hoping there'll be a lot of good options.
Zag is going to make a keyboard for the Pro. That'll be $140. I'm looking, this is an article in Digital Trends. They have a number of these. the iconic Pro iPad Pro case. A lot of these are cases with Bluetooth keyboards in it, and then, of course, the Logitech.
I don't like those designs only because it throws away the greatest advantage of having this tablet, which is when you the times when you don't need a keyboard.
Yeah.
Now you've got this really thick and clunky and bulky thing that's for $20 coated in vinyl.
So is your advice to wait?
I would say definitely if you really want something to you're going to be using it as a laptop replacement. I would say definitely the stopgap measure would be to get like a Logitech the one I recommended last week. I can't remember the name. I think it's the 830. But you can get these for $50 and they work great. And a compass stand. I intend for that to be my main like writing kit for this thing. And then in about 6 to 10 months, you will see a lot of great options that will turn into a notebook sort of affair for when you really want it to be a notebook.
Who of you, and Jim, I don't know, has just run off. But
the Heineken truck came by.
Damn raccoon. Raccoon took his power adapter.
In that neighborhood, you know, the Heineken truck comes around and has a little ring, ring, dingle, dingle song. Yeah. And the Heineken man's here. Who of you will use attempt to use the iPad Pro as their sole device?
Oh, I will. I mean, the entire time I have it until I get a review finished, I'm going to entirely.
That'll be yours, iPad, yeah.
Feels like you have to.
Yeah,
there are a lot of iPad Pro stands already out. That's interesting.
Like I did the MacBook review only on the MacBook. I think it's kind of important to.
No, I think you're right.
Prove that you're using it.
Yeah.
It's not just the size of the screen too. It's also iOS 9 and the ability to do side by side stuff. I've been using that kind of setup on Windows 8 and Windows 10 for a while, and I think it works really well. It really is for mobile. That's all you want because it keeps the clean interface of a one screen one app sort of a work setup while still being able to actually get work done. I will tell you something. There was an incident in LA last week. That ended.
Did you get married?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm married to my genius, just like Sherlock Holmes.
That 5% solution will get you nowhere.
It's a contentious relationship, but we sometimes make it work. We oftentimes have to spend some time apart, sometimes extended time apart when it's working.
Happened in LA.
the short version of it is that in my hotel room, I managed to destroy my 2-year-old MacBook.
Oh dear!
And this happened at 2 a.m.
Oh no!
And as I had a long, long work day ahead of me, and tried to fix it. It was clear that if I could get it working again, it would not be a good productive machine anyway. And so as I'm trying to, there was an Apple store literally a 10-minute walk away from the hotel. So I could have a brand new MacBook in five, as soon as the store opened at 10. And so given that I couldn't get it any earlier than that, I had some time for quiet contemplation. And after you destroy a $1,500 notebook computer that was
Andy.
In fine shape, it does put you in a contemplative mood, shall we say. And it did occur to me that, well, boy, I was going to buy the Sandy Bridge version of this next year anyway, because I usually get between 2 or 3 years of life out of all my MacBooks. But, you know, what if, and the iPad Pro is definitely shipping next week. What if we were to try without, because we will not have an option, like Cortez burning his ships. What if when we we buy an iPad Pro next week, and that is our only notebook until Sandy Bridge ships? And boy, it was a long thought process. I decided finally that I didn't, given that I had to record a podcast at 11 in the morning and I had to give a presentation. I was at MacTech to deliver the closing keynote on Friday. I thought that I don't want to get all those things done and work on my iPad mini, which was the only computer that I, only other computer I had, but it was tempting. And I think that it could work out that way. So the intention was there. I finally decided that
I'm sorry. What happened?
Well,
what happened? And then what did you buy?
Okay. Well, I have to say this, that in my defense, I have owned MacBooks and PowerBooks since the PowerBook 100.
This is bad. Okay, when you begin with "in my defense."
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm still. So it's not as though I'm careless with my toys. Okay.
No.
And so this is the first kill I've ever done on a machine. So it's like a lot of conferences where like you're busy at the conference until like through dinner. As a matter of fact, there was an outing to go see the Steve Jobs movie and then have a discussion after that. And I begged off of that one after dinner because I knew that I'm too tired. I need to get 3 or 4 hours of work done and I'm already like half asleep. So I decided that I go back to my room, decide that I got 3 or 4 hours of work ahead of me, but I just need to relax a little bit. So I will just get into bed, answer my email, and have a beverage, a beautiful cold glass of Diet Dr. Pepper. You're in this huge king. Again, in my defense, I've done this for years. Huge king size hotel bed. They're about on the Mohr scale. They're about as little bit softer than talc as far as like firmness goes. I had the drink on a big tray. It was off to my left, way to the side. And I was like on my side answering my email. What happened was I fell asleep unexpectedly at 9:30, woke up at 2 a.m. wondering why my MacBook screen was dark. The keyboard was dry. Everything was dry. It took a while for me to work out that, oh, the keyboard of the MacBook is dry, but underneath the Mac, there's a wet spot underneath it, exactly the area of that MacBook that goes through that thick hotel comforter and all the way through to the sheet underneath.
And you fell asleep, so there was no
I fell asleep and I knocked the drink apparently on top of the keyboard. And then over the course of 4 hours, it just saturated everything and then dried. I finally, after a couple of hours of work, managed to get it to the point where I would get a startup chime, but that's all this device was capable of doing, just recycling the startup chime over and over and over again. I did bring it home. I'm going to try to clean it. I'm going to see if I can get it working again. But obviously, once you've dumped soda into the keyboard, that keyboard shot and, you know, maybe I can use it as a Bluetooth device. So like I said, it was an accident. Maybe I will reconsider my having beverages in bed policy. But fortunately, my last full backup was like the day before I'd left for this trip. Everything that I'd done since then was on Dropbox. There was zero data loss. I was only out my dignity and $2,000 for a new MacBook.
So you got a Pro?
I did get just – I replaced it as is. I got a 13-inch MacBook Pro.
That's a nice computer. I know it's big.
It's a nice computer.
But it has all those connectors. It makes me feel so good.
Yeah. I mean, I can't – yeah, I've tried to get into the Airs, but they're just not – for some reason, they're just not the environment that lends itself to conducive work. Also, it's hard to. I don't think you're required to have a Retina screen. But once you have spent 2 years with a Retina screen as your primary screen, that's really, really hard. Maybe the reason why I was so philosophical about this was that I do drive a really old car. I'm used to the idea of spending 45 minutes by the side of the road instead of 3 hours at a library working. And then you get towed to the garage and told that your car needs $540 worth of new alternators and stuff to get it working again. And you say, okay, well, I want my car running again. So that's what happens. And also now I have Force Touch. That's great. Now I have a 10-hour battery. That's great. Now I have a faster generation processor. That's great. And also I've managed to solve the single greatest source of pain I had with that 2013 MacBook. I cheaped out and got a 256 gig SSD boy, I did not make that same mistake.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
So now I have a 512 gig.
Yeah, it's nice to have SSD. That speed in space. Yeah. So do you want to do an experiment with the old one, like try running it through the dishwasher just to see?
No, but what I'm going to do is see. This is I joked. The other good thing is that this gave me a killer 15-minute open for my closing keynote. So as I said to the people at Mac Tech, I'm like CNN or Fox News in that I have an opportunity to take tragedy and monetize it. Step one was using that as my opening for my keynote to a group of mostly a couple hundred IT people. But also it means that, okay, I'll write a Sun-Times column about how I broke it and why it was all okay because I had backups. And then once I have collected myself a little bit, I brought the remains home with me as my check bag. I'm going to take it apart and I'm going to see if I can clean it up. Yeah. Running stuff through a dishwasher was a good solution, like in the 90s. But now that everything is surface mount, I'm serious. I used to fix like old motherboards and stuff, not fix, but clean old motherboards that way. But that's
still just ruining it. You gonna do the Viking funeral pyre, Andy? Just put it on a boat with set it ablaze and let it go.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to take it all apart. I've actually never taken a unibody MacBook completely apart down to the frame before, so that'll be a little bit of adventure.
Pictures. That'll be fun.
And that's what I'll do. And also, I'm going to clean everything with distilled water. You don't use tap water because it's got minerals and stuff in it.
And contact. So you could probably use contact cleaner if you don't mind the ruining the environment.
We'll find out. This will be intellectually co-sponsored by iFixit, because I'll have their teardown guide. I'm hoping that I can get it working again so that I can at least have it in the office, even if the trackpad is shot, even if the keyboard is shot. The screen is probably okay because it was just a spill. Who knows? Maybe I can find a good deal on. Unfortunately, the keyboard and trackpad is like hard glued into this part of the case, so I'd have to replace the entire thing to make it happen. But if I can just have this thing that I can have in the office that I can connect to via Bluetooth or use as a VPN server or something like that, also as a ongoing reminder that try to get enough sleep. Just get enough sleep so that you don't
pass out on that.
Fall unconscious.
The problem is you can't take the. It is an issue, I think, with those sealed MacBooks, because you can't take the battery out, so you can't remove power. And the real problem, of course, is not the sticky goo. You can clean that up. Is the shorts that it might cause.
Yeah.
And if you short anything, if there's still power applied to it, and the liquid short circuits. And fries circuits, you're gone. Yeah. You're dead. Because as you say, there's surface mountains. You're not going to replace it.
Yeah. Again, when I got power back to it, and you hear the. Bong, two, three, four. Bong, that means that hardware.
Macs don't have postcodes.
It's not even seeing the SSD. So.
The Macs can't like beep five times and let you know that's what's wrong. There's no.
It's much like the murdered victim at the start of a Columbo won't tell Columbo who killed it and how to bring it back to life. It's dead. It is an ex MacBook. But if nothing else, because the SSD is a module that's removable and it's actually physically on the bottom plate of the assembly, maybe I will be able to wipe it off. And again, I don't think there's going to be any data on it that it hasn't already.
Well, Otherworld Computing makes external cases for it, so you can actually have a 256 gig SSD.
And once again, a reminder of. Andy
lost time.
Don't not drink Diet Dr. Pepper. Okay.
I wish you had taken the chance and said, nope, I'm going to replace it with an iPad Pro. That would have been will I be able to take the iPad Pro and replace the MacBook I use for this show with it somehow? So, because what we need is to be able to put up screens.
There's an HDMI out adapter.
There is.
Yeah. HDMI out and AirPlay.
That's all we need.
I would say that if the only things that the iPad, again, I'm speculating based on not a whole lot of experience hands-on with the iPad Pro. I mean, trivial compared to what Renee and Jim have had. But I would suspect that it would be the same would be true. That's true of like the iPad Air 2, where if your job involves peripherals, forget it. If your job requires you to routinely get files on the device and off the device, it's not impossible, but it's going to be a big pain in the butt. And if you spend most of your time doing this and using pointers, it's going to be kind of a pain in the butt to use it as a one-to-one replacement for your notebook, as something that you use only when you're traveling or only when you're spending 3 or 4 hours outside of the office or outside of the house. Very possible.
I think Jason, we should try this. Well, I'll get the HDMI out. Although I could AirPlay to an Apple TV. We have an Apple TV hooked up to the TriCaster, so I could do that. It's the old Apple TV. That doesn't matter, right?
Nope.
Is there a latency when you do it that way?
It's been very good. I mean, like, you never know when a radio signal is involved, but it's always been very good for me.
Okay, well, I'll get the connector in case, but I think maybe we'll try that. It'd be kind of interesting. And I have to say, having used the Surface Book, having touch for this particular use, and maybe even the ability to use the pencil to illustrate,
like in a
to telestrate.
Game. Now Ripple goes left.
I can telestrate. I could go. Wouldn't that be? That might be cool.
Yeah.
If you need Xcode or Final Cut Pro or some you know, huge professional suite, you're not going to be happy with it.
I have computers at home and in the office. I don't need to. But for this show, I'm not using Xcode.
Right. Well, it's very correct for how people use computers today. We don't have just one computer. For a while, it used to be we have a desktop and we have a notebook. And now we have a phone and we have a tablet and we have a notebook. And we might even still have a desktop computer somewhere in the house. So this iPad Pro doesn't have to do everything that every notebook does. It only has to do everything that you do with a notebook. And like Tim Cook said in that interview, there are a lot of people for whom this is going to be a perfectly fine replacement. Whether it's a good value for them.
Well, value is another matter, right? I mean, obviously, the ideal would be to have a purpose-built device for everything. I just bought the new Kindle Paperwhite. They just updated the Paperwhite because I like to read on that instead of a tablet or a phone because it's the screen's a little easier on my eyes. But frankly, I don't need it. I could use a tablet or a phone to read. But if you can afford it, and it's only like $80 only. But if you can afford it, it may be preferable for some people. It's lighter, it's backlit, but it's not too bright. There's lots of reasons it's preferable for reading.
I'm strapping an iPad Pro to my arm like Captain America, so I don't need an Apple Watch anymore. I mean,
you don't need anything.
Depends on how far you want to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
The straps aren't as easy to change, but it looks good.
Yeah.
This was my first trip with the Nexus phones. And it really did make me wish that if there's one thing that I wish that the iPad Pro had, it's USB-C.
Oh, I love Type-C because then everything can be Type-C, right?
Not only everything can be Type-C, but you can do things like decide that actually I'm in a situation where I really would like this iPad to be a charger for another device,
right.
Or I would like this to be a standard data collector or a standard source of photos. It's pretty cool once you see what USB-C can do. And given that we're all going to be stuck with USB-C, as long as one device in your travel arsenal is USB-C, you're going to be traveling with the right cables and chargers anyway.
I got to think the iPhone 7 will have USB Type-C, right?
I don't know.
I don't know with Apple. You never know. But boy,
People were so angry when they changed from dock to lightning.
I know.
And that was 10 years.
I know. But they've signaled this with the MacBook because the MacBook is Type-C.
They're not consistent. Like they put USB-C on the Apple TV, but they put lightning on their own. I mean,
that was weird.
Doing it on purpose.
That was weird to make us not know. USB on the Apple TV really threw me. At first, I mean, for a long time, I thought it was lightning because it just has a USB logo. I should have told me because lightning's not USB, but I wasn't thinking. It's roughly the same shape and it's, you know, symmetric. And I thought, oh, that must be lightning because they put a lightning cable in the box. They don't put a type C cable. You can't update the Apple TV with that though. You can't do anything much with the Apple TV except kind of reset it.
You can screenshot with it. You can record video off the screen with
it.
You can use it. You can hook up to Xcode. You can hook up to iTunes.
You're kidding me.
No, it's awesome.
Oh, I didn't know you could screenshot and record.
In Xcode, which is a bit of a pain, but you can just you plug your Apple TV into your Mac. You start QuickTime. You choose Apple TV as a source, and you can record anything that's not DRM'd.
That's not just the developer edition. That's the retail.
I'm thinking on the retail one. Yeah.
Of course, my Apple TV is in the hutch, and my computer is
in the hutch.
And my computer is on the desk.
Leo has a gadget hutch.
Don't you have a hutch? Come on. Everybody has a hutch.
It's in the gadget hutch.
All right. I'll tell you one other thing you could do with that Nexus 6P there, Andrew. You can now listen to Apple Music. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Jim Dalrymple is here from The Loop. Nice to have you, Jim. Did you catch the Heineken truck?
I did.
Okay.
Always.
Good.
I have no issue with that.
We were speculating that that's why you leapt up, and ran. We thought the Heineken truck was going by. Maybe you just wanted to get it up.
For me, that's like the ice cream truck.
Yeah, exactly.
Kids, that they ring a little whistle, and I just take off down the street chasing them.
Daddy, can I have $25 for the Heineken truck, Daddy? Rene Ritchie from iMore.com, and of course, Andy Yannacco. From the Chicago Sun-Times. Our show today brought to you by Braintree. If you're a mobile app developer, you know that and you do commerce in your app or on your website, that this is the sticking point. I mean, this is the point for you because it's where you get the money. Show me the money. But it's also the point where very frequently your customers abandon you. In fact, the abandonment rate of mobile carts is 70%. 70%. What you really want is you want to make it easy for your customers to pay. You want to make it secure. You want to make them feel good. That's why Uber uses Braintree in their app. That's why Lyft also uses Braintree and Airbnb and hotels tonight. When you get competitors using the same product, you know you got the right one. With just a few lines of code, you're ready to accept payments. Not just payments, all kinds of payments. PayPal, of course, it's a PayPal company, but also credit cards. Also Venmo, another PayPal product. Also Apple Pay. When Android Pay came out last month, it was just a checkbox in your control panel. Boom, you're taking Android Pay. No additional coding on your part. It's just amazing. We recently spoke with Ankur Arya, the general manager of Braintree Mobile, about this V.0 SDK and how it makes changing payment options easy.
We effectively future-proof you against other wallets that become important or the other wallets that we go do the integration with. So once you've done the V.0 implementation, if we integrate a new wallet or we offer a new wallet, you can enable that via your control panel, and it's just a simple app update to your app. Let's say if you're running it on an iOS app to enable that. So very, very transparent and seamless, very easy to get going, and you're not sort of rewiring your app, which is super critical.
Your customers love it. You will love it. Their fast payouts and continuous support mean it's easy for you. If you're telling the boss, hey, boss, I found the payment system we're going to use, you want it to work well, right? Here's another tip you can tell the boss, unless you're the boss. Tell yourself if you're the boss. Braintree gives you the first $50,000 in transactions fee free when you go to BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. They'll scale with you from your first dollar to your billionth. GitHub started with Braintree, and they're still using it. You've used it, therefore. BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. Try it today. It is easy. It is secure. You're going to love it. And more importantly, your customers will, too. So, the first Apple app ever for Android was this, kind of trivial move to iOS. But now Apple's really done an Android app. Apple Music, that is weird, is on Android. And it looks to me that even if you've already tried it for 3 months on your iPhone, you get to do it again on the Android, right? You get 3 months trial. It's very much like the iPhone. This is the onboarding. So, get the red dots. What are you into? I'd say rock, right? Metal for Jim. Classic rock for me. If you hit it a couple of times, it makes it bigger. Whoops. You want to make it bigger. Classical music. I like that. R&B. Jim,
anybody else just kind of sad about Andy's story? I mean, I'm still sad about
Andy. Oh, you're still sad?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm over it now.
Well, it is sad when anybody loses a laptop.
That's okay. That's more sympathy I've gotten from humanity in the past 3.5 weeks. I'll take it. I'm a sympathy camel, Jim. I can. I'm sticking that in my hump, and I'm going to live off that for the next month.
Stick that in your hump and smoke it. I like country. I don't mind. Now, does this do anything, by the way, or is it just making me feel good?
It biases it towards those selections.
And do I have to fill up the U circle, or can I just do a few things? Because I don't want to. It's encouraging me to do more, and I don't want to do more. All right, I'm going to say classic rock and classical are my two big red dots. All right, choose your favorite. Oh, now you have to choose artists. I'm not going to choose Van Halen. I don't even know who Neo is. Richard Wagner? I like the London Symphony Orchestra. I love the Kinks. Who doesn't love B.B. King? The Berlin Philharmonic? AC/DC, Jim, right there. Oh. Yep.
Do it.
Oh, I pressed the back button. Okay, that's something Apple never thought about. Crap! I got to do it all over again. All right. I don't want to bore you all.
Destructive navigation elements within the line of hand use.
That is not, there's... that's a problem. That's kind of a problem.
I guess they suspend the rules on Android apps. They're allowed to only paint the side of the fence that people do see.
Sufficient.
Now I have a whole different set of things here. All right, let's see.
How different is it from the Beats 1 app from Android? Because I never really used that one.
I don't remember, to be honest with you.
I don't remember either.
The Beats 1 was pretty similar on Android as to iOS. You made the sentences and all that stuff. And this looks very much, I think this is a duplicate. Have you set it all the way up, anybody? Andy, did you set it all the way up?
Yeah, well, actually, I didn't even ask me. I just logged in with my MacBook account.
You didn't have to go through this.
Here's everything that I've got on my MacBook. So I like the fact that it's a straightforward, seamless process. They managed to have incorporated only those elements of Android 5 and 6 that you really can't get around. It's a very, very familiar sort of interface. I mean, everything that I'd seen on my iPad just a couple days ago is right here in front of me. All the stuff that I just bought is right here in front of me.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
Yeah. So I did not renew Apple Music on the iPhone, so I guess I'm getting
your punishment.
Yeah, I'm getting a new a new look, a new feel. Beats, I presume, Beats without paying for it. You get 3 months, the same deal, $9.99. I presume
always on breaking worldwide.
Well, it's Julie Anouga. Oh, we're back in the club. Let's rock and roll. I'm Julie Anouga. Oh, you won't believe what you. Oh, I like St. Vincent. Oh, see, this is nice. Upcoming show. All right. I don't know. It's the same, right? Same stuff here. Oh, look at this. It's nice to- NPR, huh? ESPN. So there's some talk in there. You can mix some talk into my music.
Is Connect there, Leo? Can you get your social on?
Yeah, you bet it, baby.
I got to say, it does feel like a very well-written Android app. It doesn't feel like...
Oh, it's good.
We've all, on both sides of the fence, used apps that felt like, okay, they got... They outsourced the... with no budget, the porting of a certain app, and it sort of works. If this were the first time we saw Apple Music or a brand new music service, I think that they were well funded and well intended.
They did a great job.
Yep. And they didn't try to port over like the iOS interface. It really does feel like
native.
Everything if you chose Android or if you've been an Android user for a while, this is a completely familiar user interface.
Absolutely experience. Native. Yeah. Feels great.
And it's the same 100 countries except for China, and China's coming soon.
China is a big Android country, right? I mean, don't they have a lot of...
70% or something?
So they'll want to do that. Well, there you go. Apple shows that it can go cross-platform just fine. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, now that's a huge set of people they're adding to the mix. They said 11 million paid subscribers, but that was just with iOS and Mac, so... Now that's on Android, we'll see if that goes up. Should at least double, I would think.
Yeah. I can't imagine how much they're budgeting for tech support, though, because they know that's going to be a real big problem with the range of hardware that they're dealing with and having to coexist with other apps on the device that don't play as nicely because it's a less controlled environment than iOS.
They gave it to the iTunes on Windows team, Andy.
They got nothing to do. Sure. You guys aren't too busy, are you?
And they're used to it.
And they're used to it.
Is it a Dell? Oh, Motorola. I don't know.
Yeah.
We don't punish you by firing you. We punish you in other ways.
Siberia for
iTunes. Tell me, Doug, how much do you value your Apple-funded health insurance? Because we can arrange so you can keep it, but you might prefer to not to pay for your own insulin from now on.
Samsung desk, how can I help you?
I'm looking at the Tim Cook interview with the Telegraph just to see. There's he talked about more than just saying you don't need PCs anymore. He talked a little bit about the iPad Mini cannibalizing the iPhone. He says that's fine as long as we cannibalize ourselves.
Yeah,
and I think that's fair enough. In fact, that's one of the things Apple's done really historically done very well is not worried too much about cannibalizing the iPod with the iPhone.
That's when he talks about the health device.
Yeah. He says, he's talking about the Apple Watch. I think we'll set new sales records this quarter. Things are going well. The Telegraph says he's keen to highlight its health benefits. It contains sensors, which allows people to monitor activity levels and heart rates, and recounts how it saved a schoolboy. Quote, this is the football player who learned from his watch that his heart rate was elevated. He mentioned it to his trainer, sent him to the doctor. Doctor told him he would have died the following day had he not come in. Basically, his organs were shutting down, and thanks to Apple Watch, he lives to play another day.
And that's pretty incredible when you think about it.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, things that would have been a tragic story that we would have heard on the news where this football player wasn't feeling well at practice, and the next day he died.
Yep.
It's one life. Is it worth it? Yeah. I mean, it's pretty incredible.
He does say that we don't want to put the watch through the FDA process. I wouldn't mind putting something adjacent to the watch through it, but not the watch. So this is getting FDA approval as a health device, a government-regulated, government-licensed health product. He said it would hold us back from innovating too much because the cycles are too long.
Yeah.
And that makes sense, actually. But you can begin to envision other things that might be adjacent to it, maybe an app, maybe something else. So that's,
Apple,
yeah, that's
health band.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. When you take a look at these dermal sensors that can actually get blood readings, the first company to make a really good watch that can monitor blood sugar levels just interactively throughout the day, that's going to be a transformative element, not only in the management of diabetes, but probably also in the investigation of a better treatment or even a cure. When you get that data hour by hour, minute by minute from millions of people.
Do you think we saw one analyst estimate that Apple sold, what was it,
seven million
Apple Watches. Do you think that's reasonably accurate?
It's Fitbit levels. It's pretty good.
Yeah. About what you'd expect. As for the Apple TV, Tim Cook says early sales are good. We got out of the chute extremely strong, very strong in the first days. Somebody at the Telegraph doesn't actually know what out of the chute means. Obviously not a rodeo fan because they spelled shoot S-H-O-O-T. Yeah. What is a rodeo, actually? So I believe it's
C-H-U-T. Like Piccadilly Circus.
A key gauge of the success for... How did that get through the editorial process? It's interesting. We got out of the chute. Like somebody shooting at them. Very strong in the photo shoot.
Maybe they just figured, like, it's Apple. They probably designed it just so it could photograph well as a static object and could function. Who cares?
The gauge of success is the number of apps being developed, Cook says, is much larger than we would have predicted. I would agree with that. The response has been very good. The App Store grows at leaps and
bounds.
Isn't
the weird thing, though, like, sort of like we're just talking about the iPad Pro, where they won't say exactly when it's going on, like which day or what hour the pre-orders are. They didn't do that with the Apple TV either. And it makes you think, well, maybe there's not enough. But then you go into the store and there's thousands of them on the shelves. Yeah. So it makes it curious that they won't give you, like, specific time or specific days.
Asked whether Apple wants to launch its own content subscription streaming service, which, of course, has been rumored for years, Cook says, quote, "We will see. The key question for us is, can we do something better that acts as a catalyst? If we conclude that we can, then we would, but I wouldn't do something just to do something." Footnote here, Time Warner is now doing with Roku a deal so that if you don't want a Time Warner set-top box, you can use your Roku as a set-top box. So it is, you know, there are companies talking to other companies about this kind of thing.
That was the Xbox original plan, right? Like you're supposed to be able to get an Xbox and use that in lieu of your cable device.
Yeah, in fact, Microsoft shut down Windows Media Center, which I think a lot of people use. I hear from all of them. Because it was the best way to do a DVR with your PC. But they shut it down. They stopped developing in 2009. They now actively delete it if you install Windows 10. And everybody assumed, well, that must mean the Xbox One is going to take that place. But they still, at least in the U.S., don't have a way to record, you know, from cable. I think there's an over-the-air
device. There's HDMI pass-through, but I think that's all you get.
They've got to do that. They've got to make, because I love the Xbox One, and I think it'd be a great media. I use it. I watch
TV. They were originally
going
to do deals with cable companies to give you that instead of a cable box. And the cable industry are just so intransigent.
That's the bottom line. This is really
hard. I put a picture. I bought an Apple TV. I went to my mom's. I installed it for her. I got it all set up. I took a picture of it next to her. And Videotron gives you these Samsung cable boxes. And the Samsung cable box, it looks like a 1930s VCR. It's complete with this cage and these huge. And it doesn't have a DVR or anything in it. It is just a cable box, just HDMI in, HDMI out. And it's like 3 feet by 2 feet. And this is what we're dealing with in the cable industry. I've gone from Palm Trio to an iPhone 6S, and we still have almost exactly the same cable boxes.
Yeah. I'm loving the Apple TV. The more I use it, the more I like it. The pictures look great. I like being able to talk to Siri. Somebody's saying in the chat room that the Ethernet, I'm sorry, Jim, hold on a sec, that the Ethernet cable is not as fast as Wi-Fi. Is that true? Because I do.
True. It's 10 base T instead of gigabit, and the Wi-Fi is 8, is AC.
I thought I'm going to do the best possible thing. I'm plugged in the Ethernet cable. So I'm taking it off because it does buffer. The other day I was trying to watch Fargo, the TV show, and it said it's going to be 14 minutes.
Yeah, but that's probably not your Ethernet cable buffering. That's probably the connection going into your house and buffering it. Yeah, the 10 base T is probably fast enough for for 1080p, 60 frames per
second. I want to say a bad word about Comcast, but I won't. I have Comcast Business. It's supposed to be 100 megabits, but it's anyway. I don't know.
Wow.
I will just. I will.
And it's buffering.
Yeah, it shouldn't be buffering, should it?
It should not.
No.
No.
And this is something I bought on iTunes, so I'm getting it from Apple, which does a very good job with their CDN. So I don't know, I'm baffled.
Do you just watch like HD videos of confetti cannons being shot? That'll affect the data rate, the compression.
I plug in because I don't want to have to deal with anything interfering with the radio signal. I've been fine.
Mm. I'm sorry, Jim. You wanted to say something? I was going to ask, but
no.
Then the Renee. Now, has anybody been finding that the radios in the Apple TV are not as good as in the old one? Here's why I ask, because I don't know whether it's in the apps or the radios that I'm getting a lot of like drop connections and like loss of video for basically look what seem to be bandwidth problems on a couple apps like YouTube and HBO Go. And I swapped out the Apple TV box for a Roku 3 and did not have any of those problems. And I don't know whether I've just the placement of the radios or whether it's just the apps being wonky. Because now we have this new diagnostic variable that are these apps being written correctly in these version 1.0s?
I had the same thing. We ran a bunch of tests. And for example, like Netflix will start immediately, but iTunes will buffer. The radios are great. As far as I can tell, the radios are doing 802.11ac really, really well. Just some apps are not doing HTTP live streaming anywhere nearly as well as the other ones.
Oh, my God. Is that one of ours?
Keg airdrop.
Is there a case of Heineken with a parachute coming?
I have to go man my anti-aircraft gun here. So just hold on.
Oh, my God. It's a Bud Light strafing.
Chinese consumer demand for the iPhones remains strong, according to Cook. As to India, it's early days. Three earlies, if you're counting. But it is the next huge market for us, says Tim Cook.
I thought that was great. I don't know. I can't remember a previous time where they said anything quite so explicit about India. They've been often talking about untapped markets left for the iPhone. But it's good to see that their attentions are India is specifically on their map. Not that it wouldn't be, but it's good to see them finally mentioned that they're actually thinking about India. After they start to really. Not tap out China, but once they really have those money machines running in China, that's the next untapped market for iPhones. And it's the same sort of glorious luxury brand in India that it is anyplace else. It's just that the phone market is just radically different there.
And of course, because Tim Cook was talking to The Telegraph, which is a British newspaper, they asked him about the investigatory powers bill that's currently in front of Parliament to force companies to provide unencrypted communications or backdoors. The good news, by the way, I spoke to a Economist senior editor yesterday, and I asked him specifically about that, and he said it seems to have failed, that they finally explained to the prime minister that if you have a backdoor in encryption, it kind of breaks it for everyone, not to mention making Britain a data island as well as an actual island. But Cook did take a chance, this opportunity to say, to protect people who use any products, you have to encrypt. You could just look around and see all the data breaches that are going on. These are things that are becoming more frequent that can not only result in privacy breaches, but security issues. We believe very strongly in end-to-end encryption and no back doors. We don't think people want us to read their messages. We don't feel we have the right to read their emails. Any back door is a backdoor for everyone. Everybody wants to crack down on terrorists. Everybody wants to be secure. The question is how. Opening a backdoor can have very dire consequences. Absolutely.
I agree.
Yep.
It's hard to disagree with what Tim's saying. I mean, I understand what the government wants. The government wants Apple to open up a backdoor where only they can get to. That does not exist.
Yeah.
Once the door is there, if you have a brick wall, And there's nothing, no way, no door in that brick wall, nobody can get through. As soon as you put a door in, somebody's going to break in.
Yep.
And that's, the government, the British government or any government that thinks that this is possible are the stupidest people on the face of the earth. And they really need to, those people obviously do not know technology at all, and they need to just back up, because what they're suggesting that technology companies do is just going to be a disaster.
That's what our guest said yesterday. He said, you know, somebody's explained to Cameron that, you know, they could just go to Iceland and get encryption from them instead. You can't. No country is an island, really. In fact, Cook says that we're all connected whether we like it or not. He says it's not the case. Encryption is a rare thing that only two or three rich companies own, and you could regulate them in some ways. Encryption is widely available. It may make someone feel good for a moment, but it's not really of benefit. If you halt or weaken encryption, the people that you hurt are not the folks that want to do bad things. It's the good people. The other people know where to go. By the way, exactly the line I've said for decades about copy protection. It doesn't foil bad guys. They know how to break it. It only harms honest users.
Yeah.
Data and identity theft has a very real human cost, he argues. By jeopardizing people's financial security, it can affect their psychology and health. He's confident that the British government will do the right thing. And as I mentioned, it seems to be the case that they've realized this is a non-starter. So that's the entire interview with the Telegraph. We talked about Apple TV. Any other thoughts about Apple TV? Thank you. Last week, you mentioned that Serenity Caldwell had an article about Apple TV, read that, and then she pointed to Apple's online manual for Apple TV, which does not come in the box, which is a must read.
Yep.
There's all sorts of little tricks you could do with that clicker.
I was using it today, and I was entering search terms just to test out the search app, and I couldn't find out how to blank out what I'd written to write something else. I probably wrote Batman. I wanted to change it to something else. And you just hold down the you click and hold, and it pops up a bunch of things like uppercase letters and variant letters, but it also has a backspace, for example. You can just swipe left as often as you want. It just starts deleting stuff for you, which is way faster than going all the way to the other end to delete. There's all these sorts of things just baked into it that's impossible. I don't know if you saw it, Leo, but there was this article by Bruce Toggazini and I forget the other man's name today in Fast Company about how Apple has abandoned obviousness in their design and made it much harder for everyone to use all these things. But at the same time, there's these I got a tweet today from someone who said that you can now use dictation in airplane mode on your iPhone. It does it locally now.
Oh, nice.
And I tried it and it works. But like, these things are they consider these things hidden as a downside. But at the same time, if you had to see all of them immediately all the time, I think it'd be absolutely overwhelming. So I'm glad it's in manuals. And like when you've gotten used to the basic stuff and you're curious, you can go and find out more, but you're not overwhelmed by like 9,000 different buttons all on the screen at the same time.
Yeah, Tog is an Apple old timer.
Yes.
And so, you know,
by, interface.
Yeah. And by the way, he wrote this article with Don Norman, who is one of the kings of UI design. He's done all the research, wrote an amazing book about design. And I've kind of been saying this as well, but this is natural. This is kind of mission creep, that over time your operating system gets crufted up. There become more ways to do this. Apple was so famous in the early days. The thing I so celebrated with the first Mac was the Apple user interface guidelines, which were so clear and crisp and really made a difference. It did make it a computer for the rest of us. And they've drifted a little bit away from that. I have problems a lot in iOS with going, I don't know what to do here. It's not obvious.
It's okay to have to learn some stuff. Not everything can be really upfront there with an obvious button or an obvious menu. My first couple of days with Apple TV did have a whole bunch of frustrations. But when I came back home after an entire week of not using it, and it was no longer an alien device, it was something I was coming back to, I found that I was really warming to a lot of its differences. I still think there are a bunch of ways that they could have made it a little bit simpler and a little bit friendlier. But I'm really liking the touchpad a lot.
It's a little twitchy, though, isn't it?
I think a lot of it is getting used to it, because I've never used a touchpad in that
and learning
sort of
never
capacity
to
before.
Never to put it somewhere where you can't accidentally touch it.
Well, but once you it's about reading that guide. Once you find out that if I touch it accidentally, I can say I didn't mean that by tapping the menu button, and it will just simply forget that you swiped it at all. There's going to be some learning required. It's just another incident where it's hard to trust on a piece of new technology, a review that drops after 48 hours, because sometimes you really do need to deprogram yourself from something you're familiar with before you can appreciate what makes this new thing special.
This article is not a review. It's much broader than that. Apple is destroying design. Writes Tog.
It's not hyperbolic at all.
Worse, it's not at all hyperbolic. Worse is revitalizing the old belief that design, and I'm not sure I disagree with him. I would say this is right on. Design is only about making things look pretty. No, not so. Design is a way of thinking, of determining people's true underlying needs and then delivering products and services that help them. Design combines an understanding of people, technology, society, and business. The production of beautiful objects is only one small component of modern design. Apple's reinforcing the old discredited idea that the designer's sole job is to make things beautiful, even at the expense of providing the right functions, aiding understandability, and ensuring ease of use. They say, Apple, you used to be the leader. Why are you now so self-absorbed? And then, worse, why does Google follow all your worst examples? I'm not sure I disagree with this. It's a bit of a manifesto.
There's some good stuff in there. The problem is that they are not wrong, but they have they get to a good point, but they do it in a wrong manner. Like, you can actually have differences of opinion about what makes good design. It's not that my opinion is right. Even as luminaries though they are, they have a very definitive point of view when it comes to design, and there are other alternate points of view, which is a good thing, because if everything looked the same, it'd be horribly boring. People at Apple really do believe that they are doing something that is aiding usability. You can say it's their bad choices, but they're not doing choices for the wrong reason. They're just choices that you don't happen to like and agree with. And, you know, I think if you understand that, it helps you explain it better. So this article, it reads like, you know, almost like you mad bro, sort of like in a cliched sort of sense, instead of doing a deep dive into these are the choices they made. I understand why they made them, but these are potentially better choices, and here's the reason why.
Well, the example they give, and actually, I love it that they put this back in Apple TV, but another problem is the inability to recover after an undesired action. One way
which
to
is
do
in iOS 9, and they admit that later in the article, yeah. So I don't know why they've spent so much time on it the article, because it's already long
but
enough.
It took nine iterations of iOS to bring undo back, basically, right? And I understand, you know, and by the way, that was one of the things people knocked Android for, was the back button, but that was essentially what the undo was.
The back button conflated in inter-app and intra-app navigation.
I understand,
which
and that
for
made
some
it confusing.
People was, yeah, for some people it was confusing.
Yeah.
So again, like, it's difference of opinion. Some people are like, great, give it to me right away. I'll figure it out. That's awesome. And other people are like, I don't even know what this is doing. Take this away. And these again, they're not bad choices. You just might prefer one over the other.
I think it's an article that is absolutely well worth reading. Did need to be written, and I somewhat agree with it. Although, you know, I think this is an important conversation to have. I think Apple's sometimes given a free pass on UI, like, well, because nobody else is even close. Doesn't mean Apple shouldn't continue to lead the way.
Yeah, I think that we all need a good broad perspective on how these things work. Oftentimes I'll read on a blog somebody who don't know how to put it. It's they don't recognize that the same thing that they're praising Apple for right now, the same user interface design, the same material, the physical design that they're praising Apple for right now is something that they excoriated Android or Microsoft or someone else for 2.5 or 3 years ago. It's possible to have blinders on. It's possible to ignore the fact that every piece of design, good or bad, is moved towards a certain purpose and trying to maximize specific variables. And sometimes it's just not a set of variables that are relevant to how you use this device.
Yep. They say that Apple has misunderstood Dieter Rams. They're always referring to Dieter Rams, the legendary designer at Brown. But they've completely you've completely misunderstood my writings.
Marshall McLuhan. I happen to have Dieter Brown right there. What would you have to say about interface?
There's a great example in the article where they say it took Apple 9 generations to get to showing lowercase versus uppercase keys on the keyboard. And that's very true. But at the same time, there's a lot of people, and you can see this in testing, who when something changes like that, they lose the glyph. So they see a lowercase A, change to an uppercase, and they just lose track of it, and they have to spend time reacquiring it. And that that's the penalty that you pay for making it distinct. And all of these things have to be weighed. And how many people will this bother? How many people will it help? And I think making it arbitrarily simple is a disservice to both. They could say, well, it's worth it even though it has this cost. But to just say it's dumb they didn't do it in 9 years, I think, again, it's short-sighted.
Drove me crazy. It was actually one of the primary reasons I left iOS, to be honest with you. I was entering passwords wrong way too often because I had no idea. Are we in uppercase or are we lowercase? Although
the shift key was to blame for that.
Look at Gruber, who says, I turned that feature off immediately. I like all uppercase. So there's always somebody.
Physical keyboards are always uppercase.
I
love the way that they did the lowercase, uppercase. I mean, it's probably a very simple thing, you know, that that this is the way that they wanted to do it. But for me... I thought it was great. I really did. I use it all the time. Love it.
Thought it was much needed, frankly.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I saw that Gruber turned it off, and, you know, I didn't agree with his take, but...
Doesn't drink Heineken, Jim.
I like it that you have the choice. I think that's great. You have to go deep into accessibility to turn it off, but that you can turn it off. Now, of course, that means you've got lots more settings, and proliferation of settings is another issue in UI design.
Yeah, everything is a compromise.
Right, right. Siri's better than Google Now and Cortana. What? This is not the common communal wisdom, but apparently it might be the case, at least lately. A survey in which Siri, Google Now, and Cortana users were asked to rate their satisfaction. They actually had to do some work, though. They had 7 different requests, and then they would report on how well each service performed. And you could see in the graph, Siri had the lowest percentage of incorrect answers, asked fewer follow-up questions before it was able to carry out the task or answer the question. When does Kung Fu Panda 3 come out? Was the worst. It didn't do that well, apparently, but it did great when it was asked to set an appointment. Yeah, Siri does that very well, right? Probably better than anybody else, I'd agree. Who won the Super Bowl in 1978? How many calories are in a muffin? I think that information comes from Google, let's be fair. Turn Wi-Fi setting on. That's a nice feature. Send a text message. Where can I buy tires? Experts Exchange did this, and so if you want to see the battle of the virtual assistants, we should probably do something like this. Do you guys agree? I mean, I know this is an Apple show, but you guys are objective. Is Siri the best?
Depends. Like, so my problem with these things is that you have to define best up front. So, and this is customer satisfaction. So they're doing that. But for example, Google Now does things that Siri doesn't do. So is that best for you? Siri is really good with multiple, like, Siri's traditionally gotten really good results with other languages that are better than. So if you use another language, maybe that's the most important thing to you. So these things, they often depend on what you hold dear. And then you try to find the service that best meets those needs.
I think that's fair.
But I guess what, you know, does the virtual assistant that you're using work for you? Siri works for me. I use Siri on my watch all the time.
Right.
And, you know, it's more of, you know, if I'm sitting down today, who's playing in the NHL tonight? Because being a Canadian, you know, I take my teeth out. I, you know, get ready for the for the hockey game tonight. Come on. And, you know, instead of going, I'll be on the computer. Instead of looking on the computer or my iPad or even picking up my phone, I'll just press and hold the button on the watch. What's the NHL schedule for tonight? And there it is. And I just scroll through and say, oh, great. You know,
I think you should do these. I mean, they put the commands online. I think you should probably do these yourself and see if you are equally satisfied with the results.
Are you satisfied with your virtual assistant?
I'm satisfied. Look, nobody is Scarlett Johansson in my phone. That's what I want. I want the cute little giggle.
I wish that some of these things would clarify what satisfaction means,
right?
Because it's there are a lot of
cute little giggle for you. Excuse me. Sorry, Andy.
Okay, Google. Sorry, when does Kung Fu Panda 3 come out? See, I can't even get her to respond to me. She's just ignoring me right now. So
she's busy listening to Apple Music.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry, Dave. I can't do that.
How many movies has Don Knotts been in?
That's a good question.
Oh, just did a Wikipedia search.
Ah, yeah. See, I like it when they say, Don Knotts has been in 43 movies.
I know.
My favorite is...
Giving you the internet is not an answer.
The incredible Mr. Wimple.
I can go to the internet myself and,
right.
and type in. So give me an answer.
If I'd wanted to do that, I would have just said search for Don Knotts movies. Actually, you can do that on Apple TV. So you're saying Apple TV doesn't have to phone home to do those searches? Is that what you said?
No, that was the iPhone 6S. If you turn off the internet, it would still do dictation.
Interesting. Oh, dictation. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. I want to show you my cables. Yeah, cables are big, you know. You got to have the good cables here. And Corning, you know the name Corning, the Gorilla Glass folks, they make fiber optic cables that have none of the problems and all of the benefits of fiber optic cables from the past. You probably, you know about the issues of fiber optic cables, right? We had, when we put in our sand downstairs with the orange fiber, the engineers said, don't touch this. Don't step on it, whatever you do. This is fun. I love this. These are the new Corning optical cables. They're USB 3-dot optical and Thunderbolt. I'm using the Thunderbolt now on all my Thunderbolt devices because it's not only fast, you can go much longer distances because you know what fiber optics is. It's using light instead of electricity. So these cables, it's actually kind of interesting. In the cables, they have put a little extension on it. You can see it right here. You know, it looks just like a normal Thunderbolt cable, but inside here is something that converts the electrical signal, because Thunderbolt expects copper, to light. And then there's a receiver on the other end that does the same thing, converts the light to electrical signal. That is really kind of amazing. They can get it into something this small. And then they've gone a step further by making these cables very robust. So we have a little tester here. You're going to enjoy this, Jim. Corning gave me this little glass thing and a laser pointer. So you can see the blinking red light. Now, what I'm going to do is connect this modified cable to that. It's modified so I can actually just plug it into the laser. And as you can see, on the other end, the light comes out the other end. But thing is, watch, I can tie this into a knot. Now, don't try this with your other fiber optic cables. Only if you have Corning fiber optic cables. Worse, it's still transmitting. Worse, I'm going to crimp these. And these are little holes. I'm going to crimp this like crazy and show you how incredible, resistant, robust these cables are. They're good enough now that you really should be using them instead of the old copper-based cables. You can get exceptional throws on this. 60 meters, that's 200 feet on Thunderbolt. That means you could put your storage area network or your Drobo in a closet down the hall in the basement 200 feet away for USB 3, 165 feet. Now look at that. Have I crimped this and tied it in a knot? And let's see, it takes a bending and, yep, it keeps on sending, my friends. These cables are robust. You can declutter. You can move peripherals out of the way. You can improve productivity, increase security by locking up expensive gear. They even make safes now that you can put your USB drive in. If you're a video professional, if you need high speed, a photographer, a great way to get amazing cabling, 50% thinner, 80% lighter than copper cables, flexible. You can walk on them. You can bend them. You can tie them in a knot, and they keep going at full speed. 20 gigabits per second for Thunderbolt. Up to 5 gigabits per second for USB 3. No other cable even comes close. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com to learn more. Opticalcablesbycorning.com to learn more. These are awesome. Just awesome cables. And I like doing the magic act with them. I, by the way, I take full responsibility for that terrible slogan, it takes a bending and keeps on sending. I made that up, not Corning. Corning.
In the ad game, that's known as a value ad.
That's value ad, man. You don't have to pay me for that. I just give it to you.
He's got a million of them.
I went out and did buy all these cables for my Drobo and for stuff. Because it's nice, you know, I love it. My Mac's very quiet. It was the same thing with the Mac Pro. And then you put spinning drives on the desk, and you can hear them now. Really, they're really loud when you have a quiet computer. Now,
you know, it's for the hutch.
I put them in the hutch. Exactly. Exactly.
It's Corning to the hutch in the Lakota.
Corning in the corner. All right. I'm going to put away my cables. But while I'm doing that, Have you seen this great article in Vintage Computing? This will bring take you down memory lane. The strangest classic Mac peripherals ever. Vintage Computing is a really fun site for this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I knew Mac Charlie was going to be there.
So if you want to run PC-compatible software on your Mac Classic, well, that's what you need. Remember, Charlie Chaplin was the pitch man for the original IBM PC. So here we are in 1984 running PC software on your Mac. And it looks, I mean, talk about hanging a bag off the side. Holy cow. Things as big as the Mac.
Oh, I bet there's still like a hole in the drywall somewhere in the campus that represents where Steve Jobs punched it.
Yeah, this is the opposite of design.
Tuma.
How about this? A phone you glue to the side of your Mac Classic and then plug in somehow, I guess via the serial port to make phone calls. It's called the Mac Phone, for Macintosh lovers only. Don't you PC folks get excited about this?
You got to really, really love your computer to put up with the most inconvenient way to call your mom ever.
By the way, this is from 1984. This came out with the original Mac. The Ergotron Mac Tilt a year later. Even the ad's making me queasy.
What they used in Bloom County.
Yeah, it does. It looks like the little
Banana Junior
dancing Banana Junior. The Microsoft, this came from Microsoft. Mac Enhancer. I don't remember this one.
No, that was an okay device if you needed to hook it up to peripherals that were not made by Apple and don't necessarily cost a fortune.
It added the one thing the Mac didn't have, a parallel port.
Yeah. Okay, but if you already had like a Epson FX 80 that you already paid $900 for.
Exactly.
How that wasn't in the Steve Jobs movie, I'll never know.
I'll be honest, I don't remember that.
The computer condom from Hercules.
I get the Mac Enhancer all the time in my spam box.
If only it would connect to the iPod Pro.
The Micro Rain Mac Station from 1984. I guess you can mount an image writer on top of your Mac.
Micro Rain. They tried, but others
Micro Rain. First you put a Mac on your Mac machine.
This is why kids don't understand our generation. The idea of so you would make people buy a separate printer for every computer in a lab. The
you
idea
had
of
to
sharing a printer.
Yeah. In those days. And by the way, on the sides, floppy disk drives. And they called it a Mac Hutch. I'm not kidding. Micro Rain. Some stray dry while others feel the pain. Micro Rain. All right.
Tell me you're getting one of those.
For my hutch?
We don't know when the pre-order starts.
I think it would be fun to just measure out what the volume of that whole setup is and then figure out how many iPads and MacBooks could I stuff in that same volume.
And wait.
Even by money, I think you'd come out pretty good.
You could fit all of them in there.
All right, moving right along. That was our humor segment. Did you read the Quartz review of streaming TV players? I have to say, he eliminated my one of my favorites, which is the NVIDIA Shield Android TV device, saying it's not even up to snuff. I'm not even going to review it, but he did spend 10,000 words rating and reviewing the Apple TV versus the new Roku versus Amazon's Fire TV versus the Google Chromecast, and says the winner is Apple TV. I don't think it's that simple. Mm. The winner is Apple TV if you use iTunes, for sure. As if you use Amazon streaming, the winner is Roku.
Yeah. You live in the U.S.
Or Fire TV. Yeah. If you live in the U.S., it's different. He said, if I had to recommend just one, it would be the new Apple TV. I think we're very happy with the Apple TV. He's really saying, as others have said, it's the potential that the Apple TV represents with the App Store that's going to make it the most interesting, right?
Well, and that's what we have to remember right now with Apple TV is that what we've seen is the foundation of what's to come. So,
you know,
what we're going to see soon and should be pretty incredible.
Renee, you counted when they came out. You counted all the apps. Have you counted it since? Do you know how many new apps are out?
It's like 1,300 as of today.
Wow.
Wow. Let's see if I can find the number. I know Jeff Scott, who does Slide to Play, has been counting them every day.
Just to see, just to show you how in flux this all is, we are finally now at the point where you cannot see every single app just by searching for the letter A, then searching for the letter B, which was the only way you could do it for the first few days.
Is Apple going to add some sort of navigation feature that makes it easier to, I don't know, it feels like there should be a better way to do that.
Well, they haven't done this in iOS yet, but ideally it would be the same sort of Siri functionality that you have for movies and TV shows, where you could say, show me racing games, show me action games, show me platformers.
And that they can add, right?
But, you know, with Siri and the way that Apple adds new features to its products, when it adds something brand new like Siri on Apple TV, it typically does it very slowly. So it'll add what it knows, iTunes, TV shows, movies, and that's it. You know, it's not going to add a whole bunch of channels and, you know, lay it out there when there could be a problem that will affect it across the board. Right now, they're in control of everything and they can put it out there. But don't be surprised in the next event when Apple TV is mentioned that they say, oh, yeah, we've added Siri for sports. So now you can search ESPN and search for college football games or whatever, and it'll show up. And that's just the way that they do things.
There's 1,404 apps as of today, according to Jeff Scott from Slide to Play.
Nice.
I will say that I would be it seems as though Apple's doing a lot more of these releases where there are obvious features where you know that these features are going to be coming in a year, in 6 months to a year from now, that aren't there anymore. It seems though, and now you can sort of count on that sort of happening, where it just feels as though there is an empty socket inside the product that is like an IOU for Apple future Music. To go later. Yeah, it's like it seems like an odd thing to omit. Yeah,
no, I mean, there's no Siri for Apple Music right now.
Yeah,
it seems like an odd thing to omit at launch, just like support for Bluetooth keyboards seems like an odd thing to omit at launch. I don't know that that actually means anything, but it does. There was a time where I didn't sort of expect that, and now I'm just sort of I'm philosophical about it, to be sure. Think, well, it's a growing platform. It's a 1.0, and I'm sure that will happen as part of a free update that you don't even have to go and get. It will just simply land on your doorstep. But it seems as though when my first flight with a lot of Apple hardware is, I thought that would work. I guess it doesn't. Okay.
There's two things that are super interesting to me. And one is there's things that they obviously just didn't have time to finish. Like when you look at the demo from Apple's September event, you can see the podcast app peeking out. And if you go to the developer documents, you see they actually show you the podcast app icon, and they just didn't have time to finish it and ship it, obviously, or they changed their minds. But more likely, it's just not finished yet. Siri for Apple Music is another thing, because Apple Music has Siri on the iPhone and it's a big service, and why wouldn't it have it? Then you have things like the keyboard, where it's like, is this a philosophical argument? Are some people saying, well, if you want keyboards and web browsers, that's really get a Mac Mini with an HDMI port. This, we want this to be purpose-built for entertainment, and we don't want it to bog down with computer conventions. And the former, I think, is just a matter of time, where the latter is sort of different people have to win different arguments.
I thought Siri for Apple Music was that, but it's in 9.1, I guess, right? It's not, it's in beta.
Yeah.
It launched with Apple Music on iOS, but it hasn't, I think it's in the beta, but it wasn't there at launch, which is, you know, people think that Apple had 2.5 years to build this box, but really this box is coming out hot.
Right.
Yeah.
9.01 is out. Do we know what it changes? Because Apple doesn't say much,
right? Bug fixes and a performance
bug
enhancement.
Bug fixes, yeah.
Enhance the heck out of that performance, Leo.
Yeah. I don't know. And it will update automatically, right? I haven't checked my Apple TV.
You go to software updates.
You have to do it explicitly.
I think you can set it to automatic, but I don't think it defaults to
it. I have it set to automatic.
I didn't check.
By the way, here's the ad blocker announcement I get from going to Cult of Mac with uBlock Origin. Ad blockers, boo! When you visit Cult of Mac while running an ad blocker, you hurt our business. You going to do this, Jim, on loopinsight.com? As a small business which provides a dozen people's livelihoods, we need to serve ads to survive. We work hard to keep ads as relevant and as high quality as editorial. It doesn't always happen, but we're trying! If you want to read the site, please, whitelist Cult of Mac. All right. Let me do that right now.
I'm not going to make fun of that.
I understand. I sympathize.
That's exactly the response that I hope that these sites
do. That's the way to do it.
explain, here is why it's important for you to whitelist us, and here's how to whitelist us, and we thank you for whitelisting us. Although when I read that for the first time, I couldn't help but think of the, you know, don't copy that floppy poster in my high school computer lab.
Yeah. A lot of sites are doing it a little more subtly, kind of like the cookies announcement with a little banner saying, hey, we see you using an ad blocker. We'd really appreciate it if you'd whitelist us. I think that's – but I get the idea. And by the way, Culta Mac, I'm just whitelisted you right now. There you go.
My concern is that Economist thing where the company that provides the anti-ad blocking ends up festooning you with malware. So it's a careful line you have to walk.
It's kind of good.
Everything's an attack surface.
It is. Oh my God! Now I can't read this site. Wait a minute,
Jim. Have you heard of a band called Attack Surface? Because
that's a good name. That's a good name. An insider tells Apple Insider that Apple will launch new metal 4-inch iPhone with an A9 CPU next year. On the other hand, I've seen other rumors that says no smaller iPhone. What do we think?
PHI Securities did that. I mean, they've got. It's hard to say. It's hard to predict these things.
This is Ming-Chi Kuo, the famous.
I think they have two sources on this now, but they had one last. I believe they had one last year, and they chose not to really. It's one of those things that they can choose at any time. Right. And the market is going to. They're a really smart company. They do their market research, and if they believe that it'll move the needle for them to have a small one again, they will. If they think most people are still only buying big phones these days. Previously, not that many people in North America were buying big phones, so they were happy making small ones. Now people are buying big phones, so they're not making small ones. It's just if you're on either side of those trend lines, then you're not going to be happy because Apple doesn't make 36 phones.
Thanks to developer Steve Troughton Smith, we have found a hidden app. If you search the App Store for indoor survey, you won't find it. But if you click the direct link, you'll find this special app that allows you to do what?
Boulders? indoor survey. That's been around for years. That's just what Apple
for
gives
mapping,
vendor
right?
partners. Yeah.
Yeah. So you use it. It measures RF data and combines it with an iPhone sensor data. And now you can indoor positioning without installing special hardware. Is this to go along with iBeacons or...
It's all part of Apple's geo team. It's just one of those things that they've been doing indoor mapping for a couple of years, and this is what they provide to their partners to do it with. And
how would you
Steve's
find,
a super smart guy.
How would you find a hidden app if it doesn't show up in the search index?
Steve can find anything. Really he found folders for the Apple TV. He found CarPlay in the original iOS betas.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Yeah, he's a smart guy.
There you go.
And a really nice guy, too. You know.
And he also makes an amazing app called Grace, which is designed entirely to help autistic children communicate.
Oh, that's neat. Is that his primary app or is that just a side project?
He does one called Speed, too, as well, that tells you the velocity of something with your iPhone. But
Grace and Speed.
If you go, I think it's high caffeine content is his website.
Okay, that's what we'll do. I won't give him a plug. Whoa, I don't know what just happened, but I feel like I'm traveling to the moon.
Visualization.
Oh, it's visualization of nothing. By the way, since nothing's playing, that's what nothing looks like when you listen to it. It's like a Roger Waters song.
It's graceapp.com, Leo.
GRACEAPP.com. Give Steve a little plug for his Grace app for autism on iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch. But this would be great on the iPad Plus, or Pro, I'm sorry, Pro. Very cool. Let's take a break, and I would like to get your picks, my friends. Jim, you going to pick another heavy metal band?
Oh, you know, I could have a little
about
surprise.
It. We'll give you some time. All right. Inside the beard. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace, the best place to host your website. If you go to leoville.com, you can see my Squarespace site. And this is one of those times when I can say out loud my website and I don't have to worry about somebody bringing it to its knees. This is the cover page feature Squarespace does, which is so nice. And then you can click into my blog. In fact, I just posted for another advertiser, I just posted a list of every Audible book I own. I didn't do it for them. People have been asking me, so with highlighted entries for the ones I particularly like. Squarespace lets you change your template, change your look. The templates are designed to be mobile responsive, which means I can look at it on any size screen. In fact, let me reduce the size of this Safari or Chrome. And you see it handles it automatically. It even does something sneaky with the images. It recenters them so my face is in the image, which I think is pretty cool. They actually analyze the image. I didn't even, they do stuff that it's really just so sweet. One of those things where you go, man, these guys know what they're doing. I want you to go to squarespace.com, and you could try it out for yourself right now for free. Just click the Get Started button. You don't have to give them a credit card number or any personal information. You can, I love it, by the way, on this cover page. I found out you could put animated GIFs. Actually, those are videos. So you could put anything in there that you want. This is the an animated GIF of me and Gina and Jeff at Google I.O. And I think it's fun. It just kind of brings the site alive. Simple, powerful, beautiful, a robust platform, a site that will never go down. E-commerce, you got it. Every site comes with powerful e-commerce capabilities. Every site looks great on any size screen. You don't have to do anything special. Their great Squarespace app makes it easy to blog on iOS or Android or iPad. I'll probably use it on my iPad Pro. It might be my new blogging platform. And, of course, incredible support. A whole page, a whole site devoted to support videos and instructions. Try it today. All I ask is when you decide to buy, and you will, you use the offer code MacBreak, you get 10% off. And if you sign up for the business or commerce account, an additional $100 in AdWords credit. That's nice. Squarespace.com. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code MacBreak. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Picks of the week. All right, don't keep us in suspense, Mr. D. Jim Dalrymple from LoopInsight.com.
I am going to pick a band called Disturbed. Disturbed is a great hard rock metal band. They do a lot of really good just chugging music. The singer is crazy, but really good, really good. He's really into the music. Love it. Love it. Love it. You put that on and go for a drive and be like a demolition derby out there. one of their early albums called 10,000 Fists is one of the ones that you should start with. And it's got a song on there that I think everybody will recognize. It's called Land of Confusion.
Oh, yeah.
It's a remake of the old Genesis song.
Yeah. Love that song.
And they do a fantastic job with this song. It's really, really good. So start there.
Yeah, baby. Disturbed. I'm turning into Jim.
Andy, oh, that's good. And they just put out a new album this year, so you can grab that new one too.
I love it. Are you an angry person, Jim? Like, you harbor?
I get all my anger out in my music.
I think that's true.
Nice person.
I think that's really true. You're like the sweetest guy I've ever met. And I think that's true. And then you listen to this aggro music, but you're getting it out in the aggro music.
I get it out, man.
That's so smart.
I don't have to worry about anything. I get it out there.
Brilliant. I'm going to try that. Andy Anatko, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week is Plex, the really wonderful media server app. They just released a version of the Plex app for Apple TV. So what it is Plex is a free piece of server software that you put onto any Mac in your house. Or if you've got a Synology NAS on the network, you can install it on the network and leave that running all the time. And it will just simply make all of your content, your videos, your music, your pictures, everything available to pretty much any Plex client that you own anywhere in the world. So it really is. I refer to it as it's a force multiplier for any sort of a streaming box, and it's available for just about everything. I've got it on my Roku. I've got it on my there's Plex clients that come pre-installed on TVs, and now it's available for Apple TV. So wherever you are, whether it's inside your house or in a hotel room, No matter whether you're through a web browser or a tablet app or a phone app, you can access all of your videos, all of your music, all your content. It's such a great thing to have if you are like me in the habit of buying video content that's free of DRM. Like you buy a DVD and you rip it, or you buy comedy videos that are available without DRM, and suddenly you have all this content that's available everywhere. It's completely platform agnostic. And also, like, if you're in a hotel room in LA and you've got good internet, you can just simply decide that I really want to see Moonrise Kingdom, which I have a copy of on Blu-ray on my server back at home, and it will because your Plex server is logged into Plex and your phone app is logged into Plex. You can either stream it directly from your home or you can download it. It also will keep an eye on certain folders so that if you have a TV capture device, it will automatically, if you have set up a DVR to automatically record stuff and just stash it in this folder on your Plex server, now suddenly you have a DVR that's so you can get Big Bang Theory or anything over the air recorded and then distributed to you wherever you are. It's one of those really good, just like little tools that if you have that installed, you will find solutions for it. And as you continue to learn how to use it, you'll find different ways to use it. The great thing about the Apple TV app, apart from the fact that it makes Apple TV so much more useful, is the fact that it is a free app. Normally, you have to, the server app is also free. Normally, for some of the bonus features like the Android app, the iOS app, you have to have like an annual subscription or a monthly subscription to a service. But the Apple TV app is completely free. So once again, you can install this on any Mac in your house or on your Synology NAS. And now all the Apple TVs in your, all the new Apple TVs in your house will be able to access every single scrap of content that you have on that server.
That is just awesome. That makes your Apple TV, you know, 10x more powerful. That's really great.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's not that I didn't. I certainly didn't dislike the Apple TV when I first started it off. But as soon as that app got loaded in, and now I've got just hundreds and hundreds of hours of TV shows and movies available to me without having to rebuy them all from iTunes. That was a big win for me.
Yeah, yeah. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week, my friend.
I have two, but first I want to acknowledge Twitter before it loses its mind, because they keep telling us that T-Mobile has announced that they're going to be streaming Netflix, HBO Go Now, Hulu, Sling TV, ESPN, Showtime, and Vivo data-free, basically. So you can just stream those without it affecting your data plan.
This is something they've done with music stuff, including Apple Music.
Yep.
I tell you, T-Mobile, there's more and more reasons to use T-Mobile. That's really amazing. They're having a big event going on right now in Los Angeles.
Uncarrier X.
The Uncarrier X event. All right. Well, thank you for that update. Now your pick of the week.
So I just want to sort of highlight two apps that make me really excited about the iPad Pro. And the first one is Coda 2, which is by our friends at Panic, Cable Sasser, Evan Mergen, Stephen Frank, all those guys. And what it is, they originally made Coda for the Mac. And I immediately switched away from Dreamweaver. This was like 5-7 years ago, and just used Coda exclusively for web development, because you could have your text, you could have your FTP, you could have your preview. It would do code, everything that you wanted in an integrated development environment right on your Mac. And they had Diet Coda, which was the best app name ever, on iOS for a while. And it did some of those things. But then they managed to get the entire Coda. I don't know what kind of shoehorn, what kind of shrink ray technology they used, but they got the entire Coda experience pretty much right onto iOS. And it works great on the iPhone, like you can see in the video. Also works great on the iPad, but now with iOS multitasking, and especially the huge screen on the iPad Pro, you can have Coda running on like 70% of the screen and Safari running on 30% of the screen, and it'll push updated previews to Safari. So you're coding on one side and you're seeing the results on the other side. And it's not multi-window and they're not overlapping, but it's a really good dual display environment. And if you're used to using Coda, I mean, all your sites are there from the Mac. They've got Panic's version of Sync running. And this and Transmit, like it continues to redefine. Like, you think that the iPad can't really do everything, and then a company like Panic comes along and says, oh, no, wait, you have not seen anything yet. And I'm so impressed with what they managed to keep doing. And on the same token, Procreate, which is Savage Interactive, James Kuda and his team, they've taken Procreate, which is a phenomenal drawing application and painting application on the iPad, and they've increased it exponentially for the iPad Pro. All of their tools now work with the pencil. I forget that you get an enormous amount of pressure sensitivity with it, full tilt support. They have the canvas now, which I think is 16K by 4K on the iPad Pro. They've added new effects. Like if you want it to, it'll automatically straighten lines when you draw them. So if you are any kind of artist and you've wanted to just draw digitally the way you could always just paint on a canvas, this, I've used it on the iPad. I'm using it on the iPad Air 2 right now, and I had a chance to try it at the event on the iPad Pro, an early version of it, and it's just phenomenal. It's, again, one of those things where you take a double take at how well they've managed to implement it. So two incredible apps, and there are a bunch more coming. So I'm super super thrilled about where the iPad Pro is going.
So you're saying that we don't know what time tonight I can buy the iPad Pro.
It's not soon enough, Leo.
But we're going to set the timer for midnight, and we're going to wake up every half hour.
Yes.
Till we get it.
Go back to sleep.
I've priced out. I have to buy three iPad Pros. One for me, one for Megan Maroney's for iOS Today, one for my wife, three pencils.
Yep.
Maybe I can get away with not getting the keyboards, but it's over $3,000.
Yeah.
And then we don't know what delivery date it'll be, but it will be in stores, you say, at the end of the week, or Apple says at the end of the week, right?
Yes. Which my guess is Friday, because, you know, that's about as end as you can get.
So with any luck, you and I and whoever else is getting one of them, which is probably everybody at this table, we'll have one for next week.
Yeah.
And we'll play with it.
It just made me think of an awesome movie app for people who happen to own three or maybe five iPad Pros, a Cinerama app. No, that three script Cinerama.
How big is the bezel, though? Can we... somebody in the chat room says, why does Lisa need one? You're not married, are you?
Yeah.
You don't understand. That's not the question you need to ask. Here is the Apple just released the iPad Pro first. I think this is the first ad. Great big universe to get us in the mood. A new world hangs outside the window. Beautiful and strange.
Oh, God. Now those people at concerts are going to be even more insufferable.
Yes. Do not hold up your iPad Pro to take pictures.
You can hold the universe in your hand, Leo. The universe
Do
in your hand.
Not use it to take pictures, especially at concerts. You're going to block the whole freaking stage.
On the other hand, my view is blocked, but at least now I have a big live view that I can at least look at. It's not as bad as it was before.
A variable refresh rate view.
You just have to tell them, could you zoom in just a little bit so I can see?
Oh, yeah, that's kind of in the cat, kind of be kind of cool. You got the you could actually use it to periscope in there and zoom in on that.
And those speakers sound great. I mean, Jim's going to enjoy his AC/DC on that.
There's four speakers. Why?
When you rotate it, they actually move at the same time as the screen. And the timing is uncanny. They did an amazing job. You just turn it and suddenly the speakers are right where you expect them to be.
So it's stereo, even though it has four.
There's some scientific name for it that I'm never going to remember, but it's basically designed to always give you great sound, no matter which way you turn it or how fast.
Left will always be left.
Yeah.
Can't wait. Well, we'll talk about it next week. I want to thank all of you guys for being here. Jim Dalrymple from The Loop, loopinsight.com, at J Dalrymple on Twitter. If you don't know how to spell it, you don't deserve to follow him. Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Lee.
Are you stealing cable? Because I'm looking over your left shoulder there, and I'm not going to say it doesn't. Okay, never mind. That's probably just power to your Christmas lights that are lighting the gazebo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Of course it is.
I put up this fake lattice because, when, you know, living under the overpass in San Jose, I didn't want to show, you know, like my neighbor Bob and his Frigidaire box. So.
You got a place to hang your socks at the end of the night so you don't get that trench foot problem.
Thanks to the homeless Jim Dalrymple. Thank you to the Canadians, Renee Ritchie as well, imore.com. Great to have you once again. Thank you, Renee. You don't want to go to the store, get it. You're going to get it online and then go to the store probably. You probably do both, won't you?
No. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to encourage anybody to pre-order it and then return it if they can get it at the store faster. Right. But, you know.
Why not?
UPS is UPS.
And, of course, Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times and his brand new MacBook.
Yep. It's nice. It's nice to have, for the at least for the first week, a keyboard that's not filled with like tiny, tiny little arm hairs in it.
It's a perennial problem for us furries. You'll find Andy's writing on the Sun-Times, but also his newly invigorated blog, CWOB.com.
Yes, thanks to Mars Edit, it's actually made it easier and more fun to blog, so yeah. I'm doing more of that.
And I saw Daniel tweeting you about all of that.
He's so great.
Yeah, love Daniel. Thanks to our audience for being here. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. And our studio audience is just now arriving, so that's exciting. You might want to get here when the show begins. Hey, maybe you're coming for security now because that's coming up next. You can email us tickets@twit.tv. Carly will put a chair out for you. If you can't watch live or be here live, you can always get on-demand versions of the show, both audio and video, available at twit.tv/MBW or wherever you get your podcasts, including, of course, iTunes. And does Apple Music have no. Oh, well. Stitcher does. Spotify does. We're on Spotify. We're everywhere you can get your podcasts. Make sure you search for Mac Break Weekly. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. Now get back to work, because you know what? Break time is over.